And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime. Hi.
Hey, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy first episode of January 2026.
You guys, I haven't seen you or heard from you since last year.
I knew you were going to do that, Abby.
Hi, my name's Dad.
Seriously.
But Happy New Year's, everybody. We hope your holidays were phenomenal.
Did you guys have a lovely time?
Yeah. Tell us. Let us know everything. Did your pets get any gifts?
Of course they
Please
did.
Show me. Also, did you guys do anything fun? Did you see family?
Yeah. Did you go anywhere fun? What did you do on New Year's Eve? Did you get together for like a family Christmas after Christmas?
Yeah.
Did you guys have one of those?
Well, I can tell you on our end, 2025 was 2025. So, of course, it went out with a bang for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lovely Christmas. I had attended a very nice wedding. And then we left said wedding to find out that my sweet partner had the flu in the ER on a Saturday night, which is just already its own whole thing. But then, of course, that means I had the flu. So we did
Yay.
Not get to travel home later for a Christmas celebration. But thank goodness for modern day technology. We are able to like FaceTime and mail things to each other and do like a little makeshift one now and get together later.
Yeah.
But that was a whole time. So that was also my New Year's plans.
Yep.
How about you?
Well, I thankfully did not have the flu, and
yes,
knocking on wood that I do not obtain it from you now. But I actually had a really nice New Year's Eve, and I felt so guilty and bad because Abby had all these plans for New Year's Eve and I had all these plans for New Year's Eve, and then Abby's like, I did not end up traveling. And I was like, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Given that you had the flu and you'd need to go on a plane and your eardrum like killed itself like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
It's probably good to stay on the ground. But then I felt bad because Abby's like, well, how was your New Year? I was like, oh, it's really good. Like it was.
No,
it
we had fun.
It was a lot of fun.
We watched all of the Heated Rivalry series.
No idea what you're talking about.
Yowza. It's on HBO, so beware. It's HBO content.
Oh.
You know, so it's not filtered, really.
Always is, yeah.
But it is based off of a book series that I haven't read about two queer hockey players that are in the closet and also, like, rivals on different teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real hot and steamy. But also just fun to see queer media represented, which was fun. And it's getting kind of big. The only thing that feels kind of icky about it is, like, I think the people that were really into the books. I haven't heard much of it elsewhere, but the people that were really into the books are now, like, kiss when they go to hockey rinks. And people are like, don't say that to them. That's my husband. And I'm like,
oh,
I get it, but they just want to see him smooch a little. That's all. I'm not saying anybody's husband should be doing that. That's obviously its own issue within a relationship, but I mean, it's the boy aquarium. I love hockey.
I love going to hockey games. Yes. I don't even know. I'm like, what are they doing? I just want everyone to have fun. But
I know.
That one looks mad over there.
That one looks mad. And you know what?
He's really, really grumpy.
There's something so heartwarming and magical about men beating each other up, like on ice.
Yeah.
You know? And I just think that's so sweet and cute of them.
On ice.
Do you think they're like, good job, buddy, when they pass each other on the ice? Like,
yeah.
I hope so.
Sometimes I think they like kick their little skates.
Do you think they cry when they have to get teams changed, like when they get sent to another team? Because like they were boys together.
Yeah, they had sleepovers and snugged.
Yeah. Anyway, not the point. Very good. A lot of sex scenes. One of my very favorite people and good friend of the pod, Randall, was like, I don't know what the storyline is because I just keep skipping that part. And I was like, brother,
oh,
gross. But it was a lot.
Yeah.
Less than I expected after everybody was saying how much it was, but it still was not nothing.
Okay. I do think anytime anything's on HBO, you expect a lot of, like, there's nothing on HBO I'd watch with my parents kind of thing.
Yeah, that very being, little.
That being said, I went to the movies last night with some dear friends.
Yes.
And saw The Housemaid, which...
Was it good? Yes.
It was actually really good.
Hell
I
yeah.
Not that I had any expectations that it wouldn't be, because I really like Sydney Sweeney and I love Amanda Seyfried. So seeing them in a movie together was really cool. The main character guy was not somebody I had seen before, and I thought he was casted very well.
Ooh, okay.
So that was, I don't even know his name. He was quite attractive.
I love that.
You could tell that there were people in the theater that had not read the book who didn't know the twist that was coming, and I kind of loved that. So I, of course, read the book. I think you did too, did you?
I do have it on my to-read list, but I read two other... It's Freda McFadden, right?
Yes.
I read two others of hers this year first.
Yes, so. I'm a fan of her books anyway, so if you haven't read hers, I would. I believe they're probably going to make the sequel as well. I didn't love the sequel that much, I'll be honest, of the book anyway. So, I mean, am I going to watch the movie? Hell yeah, but...
Of course.
I was really excited for The Housemaid, and I think it was very well done. I think the casting on it was just great. And I would recommend it. Not something you want to see with like your grandmother.
Yeah.
Would not recommend that. We were at, I'm going to be outing myself so bad right now. So we went to the bathroom after because like I had to pee like twice during the movie.
Right.
I have the bladder of, as Abby says, a pregnant mouse. And we went to the bathroom afterwards and obviously it was just like all women who had just watched the same movie with us.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I've never wanted someone else's breasts so bad in my life. Like Sydney Sweeney had, like, I was just like, I want those. How do you get those? And everyone in the bathroom was like, I know, right? So we all just had like a moment of like, you go, girl.
Girls' bathrooms are magical.
Girl bathroom talks are just, they're something else. Men wouldn't get it.
No.
But I just think it was just kind of funny because we were like, she is just beautiful, is she not? And like Amanda, like I was just like, this guy got to make out with Sydney Sweeney and Amanda Seyfried and get paid for it.
Mm.
Like, and he's batting 1,000. And then I did walk out with literally with toilet paper stuck to my fucking shoe.
Aww.
And dear friend of the pod, Emily, was like, oh, who do we have here? And like helped me get it. I would have literally walked in the parking lot to my car with that on. So yeah, it was good. Anyway, all of that to say, go see The Housemaid if you haven't.
Go see The Housemaid.
I loved seeing it like a big screen. I will say that there are some movies that you do just kind of want to see in the theaters. Oh, yeah.
Which keep for theaters me are, alive, please.
Which I like seeing scary movies and thrillers in the theater. I just think there's something about it. Like the rest, like rom-coms, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I can watch a rom-com at home. I like a drama in the movie theater because I won't get sucked in the same way at home. I am excited. There's like a couple of things that sound like new concepts for movies coming out this year, which is shocking and delightful. So.
If we could have more things that are Sinners-esque, and what I mean by that just like out of left field amazeballs.
Popping your pussy, really turning it up. It's a passion project. Like, I want to see people having fun doing it.
Like, Michael B. Jordan should be winning every single award that is available for actors for his performance in Sinners. Jack O'Connell can get it.
Yeah, I will say.
And I did not have vampires doing an Irish jig on, like, in a hive mind, all doing it the same on my bingo card when I saw that movie. And then there it was. So I just feel like.
So good.
We got some, like, actual good movies coming out. This is an unpopular opinion. I apologize. But I'm so over the superhero movies. Uh-huh. There's just a million of them. And I'm sure they're good. But, like, I haven't watched one in like at least a decade. I just don't like, it's so oversaturated. I'm so exhausted by it.
And at this point, like, don't get me wrong, we love the trope, we love escapism, we love the art of it all, but it's just the only one I'll keep up with is Spider-Verse because I think it's artsy. But the rest of them, I feel like genuinely, if you haven't seen all of them, which much like you, there's a burnout level I get to and then I stop for a long time and I don't want to go back and make up 10 years of like superhero movies to understand the next one. And I think that's currently one of my biggest problems is like, you can't just drop in. And also it's been done so many times and I don't want to watch another one because it's still happening and it's still going.
And it's not that they can't all be good, but like when four come out in a year, you're like, my good Lord.
Like, I just want to see something different. So I'm excited.
It's overwhelming. And I'm not a huge fan of it. So will I ever watch it again? Probably.
Yeah.
Is today that day?
No.
No, no, it's not.
Just quick before we get into it, you said something that reminded me of something I wanted to share with all of you because we have had a few requests for me to share like a book list, the best and worst.
We definitely have had that. Yes.
I'm not going to share my entire book list because holy poop, but I will share some of my favorites from last year.
2025.
Yeah. From 2025, where I read 30 books. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. I've never been able to do that. So I am going to start with the bummer. And unfortunately, this does not reflect how I feel about Freida McFadden as a writer. She's actually a phenomenal writer, which is part of why I hated this book so much.
Yep.
It is my least recommended of the year.
Oh.
It's The Teacher.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have read it. I started it and I heard from a family friend that like this wasn't her typical kind of book. And her other ones are really good, which I did know and I did see. And even though this one was not my favorite in content or character, she wrote it so well that I hated the characters so much, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. So yep. like phenomenal writing talent, but gross, not bad. I give it a negative 40 out of 100 for the experience of having to listen to all of those characters and experience all of that plot line. Mm-hmm. However, great writing.
Mm, okay.
As far as my recommended for thriller, my favorite psychological thriller was Midnight Feast by Alice Feeney. So good.
Love Alice Feeney.
She makes it so fun to just like see all the spooky stuff, get a little thrilled out, a little like adrenaline-y. Mm. And then also she has really hateable bad characters that make it really exciting, not exciting in like yay I'm excited about this, but just like enthralling, I guess, to yeah. see the whole thing play out. So that was really great. She also makes it fun to hate on really wealthy people who are very entitled and do a lot of things performatively, but mm-hmm. that's neither here nor there. For a mild thriller, so just not like you're not gonna like catch your breath and can't handle it, I have Beautiful Ugly. She's fun. This is the one that I was telling you guys about where I was like twirling my hair and kicking my feet. My breath wasn't taken away, but it was very fun watching the main character's breath be taken away.
Yeah.
For mystery, a Holmes-esque mystery, Everyone in My Family Has Killed Somebody. It's a great series. Cannot recommend enough. There's like three of them.
Okay.
But the narrator is an author for how to write murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But he does not write it. He just writes how to. And then the things are happening around him. And he's like, well, this is how the books go. This has to be it. And like kind of eventually deducts his way there. But it's kind of cheeky. It's a little fun.
Those who cannot do teach.
Yes.
And those who cannot teach.
Teach Jim. But then I guess also maybe self-murders.
Maybe that too.
Thank you, Jack Black. And for my last one that you guys would like is my cheeky mystery. So again, the other one was a Holmes-esque, like kind of deduct from these clues, figure this out. But this one is just lovely and fun. It is called How to Solve Your Own Murder. It's another series. Very delightful. And a very honorable mention goes out to, in sort of a mixture of these categories, the Death in Marlowe series or the Marlowe Murder Club series.
Mm.
It's hard to find the consistent name between them because they're all named different things. It is so freaking good. It's so funny. It's an old lady and two unexpecting friends from the village that she lives in solving the murder of her neighbor. And that's how it all starts. And she is like the most addicting, sassy, like does not give a fuck old lady you've ever heard of.
I love her.
And I'm obsessed.
Want to be her.
So that's my recommendations. Sorry again for the worst of. Freida McFadden had many that were not on my worst of list.
I heard The Inmate by her is really good. I haven't read that yet, but I've heard good things.
I read The Roommate, or no, The Tenant. The Tenant was great. Mm. That was also really good.
So we have a lot for you to do. My one and only book, I think I read like 3 or 4 last year. I was really slacking it. But the one that I would recommend would be Local Woman Missing.
Yeah.
I just recommend that. I'd like to see them make that into a movie. Don't know if that's in the works, but it would be cool if they did.
Yeah.
But I think we should get into today's episode.
I'd love to get into today's episode. So I believe, yoo-hoo, pod's on.
Hi, hello, and welcome, or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Ah!
Thank you for choosing to start 2026 with us. Can you believe it?
Aw, cheers.
We are, as always, incredibly grateful for each and every listener in our little corner of the true crime world, and we're looking forward to yet another year of growing, yes, sometimes crying, hopefully laughing in the moments we can find levity, and overall learning with you all together.
Oh.
Today, I am bringing you a case that you know because you clicked it, but Abby doesn't because she didn't. And that is the case of Carlene Conley.
Ooh, okay.
We've gotten an unfortunate amount of snow in the Northeast, and while I hate shoveling and stepping on snow after taking my boots off and having wet socks and now needing to go change into fresh socks, very major problems, I know, the snow has also forced me into some downtime, and I've gotten to catch up on one of my favorite true crime TV shows, which is Evil Lives Here.
Yes, and you do love them.
I don't know why.
I mean, they're great. I think that one, I mean, that has a lot of firsthand accounts.
I love the interview. I mean, some of it's a little dramatic for being the sake of dramatic, which I tend to go ugh to. But I love the firsthand accounts of people, not just like, oh, it was the neighbor of a neighbor of a neighbor whose friend heard about it one time at a dinner party.
Right. And they're willing to talk on TV.
Yeah. These are people that were quite literally in the home
with them
and very close to and aware of what was going on. So. All of that to say, I do like that show.
Yes.
The case that I'm bringing you today was brought to me first from that show. We're going to kind of take a step back. Remember that with Evil Lives Here, these are all interview style, firsthand accounts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the information available on this case matches up with a lot of the interviews here. I'm relying on a lot of the anecdotes from the family members.
Okay.
So kind of keep that in mind. We're going to start with a woman named Ginger.
Okay, Ginger.
Her name is Ginger Goats, and she had reflected back on her childhood growing up with her sister, Paige.
Okay.
Paige was 7.5 years her junior, so okay. Ginger's got a little bit of time on her. And she said that growing up, there had been signs that Paige's behavior was inappropriate.
Oh.
But no one would have anticipated that she would have grown up to become a murderer.
Oh, God.
Now, one thing I want to note just from the top is that the entire episode, Paige is referred to as Paige. In the legal documents, I've found that her name is Laura Paige.
Okay.
I believe she just went by her middle name. So you will see her and like maybe people who are just saying very factually refer to her as Laura.
Okay.
But it's Paige for what we'll be using here.
Okay.
Ginger remembers Paige struggling when she wasn't the center of attention.
Okay.
Their father was an executive for some company, and while the family did very well financially, he was kind of gone from sunup to sundown 6 days a week, and it kind of caused tension in their parents' marriage.
Yeah.
And there were more than just the two of them. It was not just Ginger and Paige, but for those who felt comfortable speaking, I'll kind of keep it just about the two of them.
Yeah.
But all of that to say that there are more children than just those two. But the mom kind of had the primary role of rearing all of those kids, and the dad was just gone so often. And there were probably other things going on at the same time that their parents' marriage deteriorated. And then soon after that, their dad and their mother, Carlene, divorced,
mm-hmm.
and their dad moved out.
Okay.
So Ginger, like, recalling her childhood, she was like, it was kind of tough. Dad wasn't there a lot. Then he moved out. Then we primarily lived with mom.
Yeah.
And mom is Carlene.
Okay.
Paige began misbehaving in school, and then she was expelled from her school.
Yeah.
She was then sent to a boarding school, and then she was also up to the same behavior then, skipping classes, doing drugs, and then she was kicked out of her boarding school. Her streak continued. As a teenager, Paige gathered her friends one day and broke into her dad's apartment where they stole booze and his car.
Oh!
Despite Carlene's pleas not to, their dad called the police and reported his car stolen. They did steal it.
Yeah.
And remember that they weren't primarily living with their dad, so this wasn't like, oh, I'm just borrowing my dad's car. This is, they like, broke into his apartment.
They had to go to his home.
They stole his stuff and then took his car and then drove.
Do we know how old they are about now?
She's a teenager at this point. Okay. Paige is. So I would say that Ginger's probably early 20s, kind of like recalling, noticing kind of what her sister was up to. But, you know, Ginger goes on. She gets married. She has kids. Like, she's kind of got a life. She's very close with her mother. But her and Paige did not really seem to ever get along. And Paige's bad behavior started when she was a lot younger.
Right.
With the getting kicked out of schools and everything. And then now,
this happens.
Now here we are.
I also can't imagine it's easy to forge a bond at any of the developmental stages before that with 7.5 years. And so all of that probably did not help.
They probably would have been great friends and their relationship probably would have gotten a lot better in their older years. Like maybe when they were both in their 20s or something. But unfortunately, there was really no room for that given Paige's behavior.
Yeah, understood.
So the dad reports the car stolen. Carlene is like, please don't do that. You know, I think Paige is the baby.
Yeah.
He does it anyway. Paige and her friends were picked up in Colorado. And to my understanding, they had been living in Cincinnati. And I believe that's where the dad was too, like kind of in that area. So either way, from like Midwest to West.
Yeah. That's a hell of a drive.
I can't confirm that 100%. From what I'm able to kind of piece together, it seems like that. Regardless, though, at least in another state.
Yes.
And at some point later, I'm not exactly sure when, but they do kind of all seem to move to Kentucky. So,
okay,
not yet, but soon they do. Meanwhile, she's in Colorado with the car when she shouldn't be.
Right. With the car or in Colorado.
Yeah, not super important as of right now, but I know some of us need to kind of be able to picture it from a bird's eye view. So right now we're in Ohio. We'll be in Kentucky soon. Meanwhile, Paige is just with her friends drinking and doing whatever she wants in Colorado with the dad's car.
Right.
Now, the dad had to fly into Colorado to attend her court hearings because she's still a teenager.
Right.
So she is a juvenile, technically. And because of this, unfortunately, nothing came of it except that their dad had to, you know, put his life on hold to go to her court hearings because his vehicle was stolen.
And probably pay for the legal fees for all of that, too.
I do not doubt that. And because she was a kid and maybe they just didn't want to, quote unquote, ruin her life, they didn't do anything. But within a few days, she was back home.
Right. Okay.
During these interviews with the Evil Lives Here team, Ginger's daughter, Taylor, spoke up. Now, Taylor appears to be maybe in her 20s, early 30s, but she's reflecting on her childhood.
Okay.
With her Aunt Paige.
Okay.
So just to kind of give you the idea, Carlene is mom.
Right.
Carlene has at least two kids, Ginger and Paige.
Yes.
Ginger has a daughter, Taylor.
Yes.
Taylor has several memories of her Aunt Paige, and few of them were pleasant.
Aw.
The earliest she mentioned is that on her birthday, her grandmother Carlene, who she called Gran, would make a big dinner. Taylor believes she was about 9 years old at this time, and she was very excited to have her birthday dinner because it was very sweet. She was very close with her grandmother.
Right.
Family was kind of all there. Her grandmother would make her like what she wanted on her birthday, so she's very excited to have that. And before they were finished eating, Paige claimed to have been ill and demanded that Carlene and her go home.
Aww.
Carlene seemed to be disappointed that she wouldn't get to spend the rest of her granddaughter's birthday with her, and she reluctantly left. But it seemed really apparent to everybody that Paige had been fine, then saw her 9-year-old niece getting attention from her mother and was like, I'm sick, we need to leave.
She sounds histrionic.
It's not great. And so they left.
Yeah.
And Carlene kind of still always like reluctantly went along with, like, Paige definitely had the power in that dynamic, which was very unhealthy. Another occasion Taylor recalled was going to the grocery store with her gran when all of a sudden they got a call from her Aunt Paige, who demanded Carlene come home because she'd fallen down the stairs. Now, that's scary. That sounds scary. They left the cart in the aisle where they were. They dashed home. In the 15 minutes that it took to get from the grocery store to the house, Paige had already called several more times, like really angry and frustrated that they weren't back yet. And when they got there, Paige was fine.
What?
Like, she was walking around, she was fine, and her grandmother, like Carlene, was like, it looks like you have a bruise on your knee. Could I get you some ice for that? But like, it wasn't a big deal. And Taylor believes that Paige threw herself down the stairs, or like, in other words, like bruised her own knee to get attention. And when Carlene saw her knee, like, again, she offered to put ice on it, but she said that it didn't look that bad. And this seemed to anger Paige because Paige was really expecting a big production of sympathy and attention. Probably also because she put on this big production of like, you need to come home. This is really bad. Like, I need you. And then when they get there, her injuries are non-existent.
Right. A bruise is obviously something going on with your body. It's not fun, but like, it's not a broken arm.
But I have bruises I don't even know how I got.
Same.
And I don't know that a bruise would bruise that quickly. So it just seemed like she either tried to hurt herself to get attention or just made up an injury. And it was like, was she jealous that her mother had taken the, like, you know, hour total to go to the grocery store with her niece? Like, you know what I mean? It just seemed kind of like ridiculous.
I also want to say I'm now between histrionic and Munchausen's, but we can continue.
I would not lean toward Munchausen's because that's like an isolated incident.
Got it.
But that needing of attention and kind of willing to do whatever it takes, even if an injury or faking an injury is what it was. Mm-hmm. But it was that needing her mother's attention and that, like, not wanting to split her attention with her niece.
Yeah, she needs undivided attention.
Meanwhile, Paige is an adult at this point. Like, this isn't, like, she's not also a kid.
Right. She's no longer a teenager.
No. No, she's grown up. And it seems like Paige has lived with Carlene this whole time. So, like, she's an adult. She's in her 20s. And she has not, like, flown the nest.
She's not left to explore, do her own thing.
No. Yeah. It doesn't appear that way anyway. Even if she tried, she always came back.
Okay.
Ginger, meanwhile, is on her own. She's married. She's having children. She's got Taylor, who's one of her children.
Yeah. She's juggling a lot.
Yes.
She's managing. Yeah.
While Paige's siblings, including Ginger, thought Paige to be attention-seeking and manipulative, her violent tendencies were either carefully masked or they hadn't reared their ugly head yet.
Okay. So nobody described her as violent yet.
No, but the operative word being yet.
Yes.
One summer when Taylor was a kid, she remembered her mom, Ginger, hiring Paige to babysit her and her younger sibling.
Mm-hmm.
What started as fun day trips with Aunt Paige turned into punishments and spankings.
Mm.
When Ginger found out Paige was spanking her kids as a punishment, she was understandably upset that she would put her hands on her kids.
Mm-hmm.
And promptly fired her as a babysitter. And Paige's anger grew. So now there's like that tension between siblings of like, I can't even trust you to watch my kids.
And probably resentment for like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I was just watching your kids.
It seems like that was like her maybe source of income for that time. It's now like she's been fired from this job.
Got it.
And what do you mean I can't spank them or like put hands on them? And Taylor was like really hesitant to even tell her mom that, like, auntie was spanking her. Yeah. She probably thought it was her fault. And it was like, don't put your hands on my kids. Like, if they need a spanking, I'll do it. Like, kind of thing. I don't know if that was the idea, but it was just, it was already tense.
And I've worked as a one-on-one, like a DSP for people with different needs in all sorts of ways. But it's a lot like in-home caretaking. Like, it's not quite babysitting, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these people are adults, but like you still have to like supervise and like make sure everything's safe. And that has included like a couple of people that I've worked with that live at home with parents that are both, that were like, there was a child and an adult. So that was a little different. But either way, it's not hard to watch someone and communicate with them, even if they can't communicate back and say, this is what mom said. I can't make you do it or not, but I can tell her.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the parents still got to parent the way they wanted to. And I got to avoid being the scary one who did the thing.
100%.
So I mean, I don't know what the situation is. It sounds like there's some mental health stuff going on for sure, but not an excuse to hit somebody else's children.
No.
Especially not without their consent. You know what I mean?
No.
So that's wild. Okay. But I'm glad Taylor felt comfortable enough to tell Ginger, right?
Yeah. And Ginger very promptly was like, don't you dare put your hands on my kids. Actually, better yet, you're not the babysitter anymore.
Yeah. Actually, more than that, don't come back tomorrow.
Correct.
Yeah.
Paige still lived at home with Carlene.
Mm-hmm.
And her jealousy of the grandchildren heightened, as you might imagine. One night when Taylor was sleeping over, for some reason, she wouldn't let Taylor sleep. And as the poor kid started to nod off because she's a child, Paige would wake her up and kind of like yell at her awake. And it got to the point where Carlene saw what was going on and brought Taylor up to go to bed. She was like, you need sleep. Let's get you to bed. You don't need to stay up on the couch and watching TV with Paige. And Paige got really pissed. They ended up going into the bedroom and having to lock the door because Paige followed them up the stairs and Paige was banging on the door demanding to be let in. Like, she was jealous of them having even a few minutes of just the two of them.
Yeah.
To the point where Carlene was concerned.
And locking the door.
And locked the door and stayed inside. Like, yeah. Stayed behind the closed door with Taylor.
Yeah.
And this is a grown-ass woman, again, still living at home with her mother, clinging to her like a toddler and growing rageful when anyone else, including actual children, had her mother's attention.
Right.
Paige pounded on the door, and then minutes later, she stopped, and the silence that followed was almost equally terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor remembered actually feeling afraid of her aunt that night.
Oh, poor kid.
Another time, Taylor was a little bit older, but again, still a kid. An argument erupted between her aunt and her grandmother, and Paige began to attack Carlene.
Oh, no.
Carlene called to Taylor to call the police and tossed her phone to her, but Paige grabbed it and threw it so they couldn't call. There was something going on. Taylor then ran outside to the car and found Paige's phone in the car, it seems like, mm-hmm. and she called her mom. And she said that her aunt Paige was attacking Gran. So Ginger called the police immediately and then headed to the house because her kid's there and she's just heard that her grandmother's getting attacked by her sister. And she rushes over. Paige had grabbed Taylor by the arm at that point and like sat her on the couch and just watched her. And yeah. then Ginger walked in. Taylor ran to her and she just kind of like hid with Ginger because she was like, you know, her aunt scared her.
Yeah.
And then the police showed up like immediately, like kind of as Ginger got there, the police had shown up. And Paige by this time had stopped attacking Carlene. Carlene got checked out by medical professionals, but she refused to press charges.
That's so scary for your niece and your granddaughter to mm-hmm. have to see. And I just...
Mm-hmm.
Emotional regulation is an important technique and skill.
And it was over something like... I forget what the argument was about, but it was something so minuscule. And right. then you could tell that Carlene got kind of nervous and called to her granddaughter to like call Come for help, basically.
Yeah.
And the wrath didn't change to Taylor in terms of getting like assault, like any kind of assaultive behavior.
Which is
But
good.
To the point where like she threw the phone to make sure she couldn't call or reach it. And then she goes outside and like in the car is a phone, like yeah. a cell phone. So she's able to call her mom. Her mom's oh the gosh. One that calls police. And it's just sad that, like, the first thing Taylor thought to do was, like, call her mom because she doesn't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not sad. It's a good thing she felt comfortable. But just the fact Hard. That her mom then had to call 911 because she was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, she was just scared and she called mom.
Ugh.
So, luckily, Ginger was able to drop everything that she was doing and get there.
Right.
But still, freaky. And when the police get there, of course, Carlene does not want to press charges against Paige.
Right.
Ginger is frustrated by this point because she really thinks that
it's like it's happening enough, like we need to be doing something.
Yeah, like she's yeah. they're all kind of growing frustrated because they're like, why won't you press charges? Like, she is being abusive to you.
Yeah.
But of course, abuse doesn't always look like that in it.
No.
And the whole why didn't they call is such a loaded question.
Yes. And especially too, I think here Paige seems ill. It seems like there's a lot of mental health going on in one way or another because none of this is logical, mm-hmm. which mental illness is not. It's not rooted in logic. You can't logic out of it. And between the reaction, the reactivity, the need for specific attention, and it sounds like, and I have to be honest, like it sounds like it's just from Carlene that she's this possessive over the time and attention of.
Yes.
So it's interesting to me that it's not everyone.
Mm-mm.
And
it's just her mother.
I'm fascinated by this. But well, it's...
Right.
There's something going on that should be looked at, and it should not take Carlene taking beatings for it to be looked at.
100%. And this woman, like, she's in her 60s.
Yeah.
I want to also take a moment to point out, yet again, as we have throughout the series of episodes that we've had in this podcast, that domestic violence does not always need to be between romantic partners or a man to a woman for right. it to be domestic violence. It comes in a variety of ways, all dangerous, frightening, and wrong. Unfortunately, I'm sure you all have guessed where this case is headed because we've alluded to it.
Right.
And it's cases like these that can be so frustrating because you can understand all sides.
Yeah.
You can understand the reluctance for a parent to press charges against their child. Even when Paige was a teenager stealing the dad's card, Carlene was like, please don't do that. So there's that like innate desire to protect and shield and take the brunt of. And you can understand the frustration of all of the other family members who love Carlene and likely also love Paige,
right,
who want the abuser to be held accountable and for the abuse to stop. And in this case, it only escalates from here.
Oh.
Ginger received a frantic call from her mother, Carlene, in which Carlene said Paige won't stop hitting her.
Okay.
And she was upset and fearful. I'm sure there's a frustration from Ginger, too, because it's like, I want you to call me and tell me what's going on, but if you're not willing to do anything about the abuse,
I can't.
What is it that you want me to do? Like, in the moment, her call, her first reaction is not to call the police often. It's to call her, like, oldest daughter, which is a lot of pressure on that daughter now to, like, kind of be the mediator.
Well, and Ginger is already so involved in this just because of the amount the Taylor's over that she's already dropping things for this.
And again, like, you can see all sides, but I look at it from her perspective. It's awful that Carlene's going through that. It's awful that any of this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's also awful that Ginger's put in a spot where she can't do anything.
Right.
Because what she suggests are things that Carlene is not willing to do.
Right.
So she gets a call saying that she won't stop hitting her. Ginger and her husband rush over to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they find Paige standing in the kitchen with a long knife, talking to herself and stabbing at a wooden countertop, gouging the surface. Ginger's husband tried to de-escalate Paige, and he actually did.
Oh.
He was able to kind of get the knife from her hand and talk to her. And while he's doing that, Ginger went looking for Carlene to make sure that she was okay.
Yeah.
She found her mother in her bedroom behind a locked door, having been attacked by Paige.
Having been attacked?
Yes.
With the knife?
Not with the knife.
Okay.
Or at least,
I mean, it's all bad, but
if she had been attacked with a knife, it wasn't significant.
It wasn't. Yeah. It's not like she's got serious injuries that they're talking about.
I think it might have been like pounding on the door and just having a knife in the first place.
Yeah. Which is also terrifying.
Luckily, she had been able to get the door closed.
Nice.
So it seemed like she was able to avoid maybe the brunt of it. Carlene wouldn't let them call the police because she wanted to protect Paige. And they also wouldn't let her get medical attention. I think she had been like punched and pushed and things. Okay. I don't think that the knife had been used on her, but I do think that she was so scared and hid there until Ginger got there. Now, Ginger and other family members pleaded with Carlene again to please remove Paige from her home.
Right.
And protect herself because they feared that this was just going to keep happening.
Right.
On another Saturday afternoon, Ginger received another call from her mother.
Mm.
Ginger arrived to find her mother now with cuts and bruises on her face and arms.
Oh, no.
Police were there taking a statement, and it was revealed that Paige had used the metal end of a broom handle to beat her own mother.
Oh, God.
She yet again refused to press any charges. Paige was brought by ambulance to a hospital where she was held for a 24-hour psychiatric hold.
That's good.
With this brief reprieve from Paige, family members took advantage of this time to again try to support and convince Carlene not to allow Paige home.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to those 24 hours, Paige called Ginger and said that she needed to come pick her up because she was released early. So what was supposed to be a 24-hour hold ended up being a few hours at max, and now Paige is like, yeah, you need to come get me.
Oh, I have so much to say after this. Okay. Yeah.
Ginger told her, we won't be doing that.
Yeah.
You're not welcome here right now. Frustrated, Paige then called their dad and begged for money for a hotel room, which he provided. So Paige got an all-expenses-paid staycation at a hotel before her mother allowed her back home, which she ultimately did. So she just got a few days to hang out and then went back to Carlene's house.
Okay.
And at this time, Paige is now in her early 30s.
Okay.
So this is not a 20-year-old acting out. Not that any of this would be appropriate at that age either. But this has been like
Life
more
long.
Than a decade. Like this is, she is to say the least set in her ways, but without no willingness for treatment. There's drug use here too that we'll kind of get to. It's alluded to in the Evil Lives Here episode. It's more talked about in some of the other sources.
Okay.
So of course there's mental health. I mean, she was talking to herself, stabbing at a countertop with a knife. I think that some of that is drug induced as well. It's a chicken or the egg situation. She's been doing drugs since she was in high school. Right. So we know that this is kind of a regular thing for her.
Got it.
I guess. But of course, it, like with all things like that, it doesn't get better. It just gets worse. So
certainly if you don't do anything about it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Continues.
Yeah. Untreated mental health and substance use does not tend to stay where it is.
No.
Now, with Paige being in her 30s, she's really been able to like sink her claws in, because now there's really never been a time that she's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's fully dependent on her mother. And there's likely some unhealthy codependency going on. I mean, there's got to be something going on where Carlene kind of felt like Paige needed her. And in fact, she had said that to Ginger before. Like, she just felt like Paige needed her. She couldn't, quote unquote, like abandon her. She needed to protect her.
Yeah, but I wondered.
But protecting your 30-year-old daughter who is in active substance use and mental health, is that protection probably is not most useful in the way you think it is.
Yeah.
It actually allowed a lot of bad behavior with no accountability.
Help looks different for every situation, and certainly like mental health and substance use, especially when it becomes a safety concern for the individual and mm-hmm. for people around them, looks very different than help for someone going through a tough time or a depression. And so many things can be happening at once, and it doesn't negate that whatever has the highest need needs to be treated first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard, because, I mean, when was this? This was a little bit ago.
Yeah, Carlene is murdered in 2015.
Okay. So, I mean, we're getting a little later into the 2000s, but I think it was the 2010s into 2020 where mental health language picked up.
It did. And that's not to say that it was perfect then or that we've got it all figured out now. But the sort of alarm bell that is important to note in a lot of these cases is that you can't force somebody to change. You can't force someone to accept help. They actually have to want it. And Paige very clearly did not want help. She did not want to change. And that doesn't mean that she was in her right mind. I'm not saying that either way. But you can't convince somebody or force somebody to want to make meaningful change. It has to start with them.
Yep.
So Ginger and Taylor and every other family member could want so badly for Paige to not behave the way that she was behaving and to make meaningful change and seek that help to make that change. And hell, Carlene did too. But without Paige's willingness to even entertain that idea, it's not going to happen. And she always had a soft landing place to go back to. Carlene always had the door open for her.
Yeah.
So without really some kind of motivation to change, like all of her needs were met, bills were paid, food was on the table, she had a warm place to sleep, she had her own bedroom, she had all of these things available to her, that everybody else telling her to change versus her mom allowing that, I don't think that there's going to be this motivation of like, I need to change this because this is going to go badly. This has been going fine.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the right answer is there, but I can tell you what happens here. And
it doesn't end well.
It doesn't end well. And it doesn't end well for anybody.
Right. Oh, okay. Keep going.
While Carlene felt like Paige was needing of this coddling, maybe wasn't the word that she would have used, it's the word I'll use.
Mm-hmm.
The family disagreed. The family was like, Paige doesn't need any of that. Paige needs to be kicked out. Paige needs to go figure it out on her own and get help.
She needs different consequences.
And when Paige was released from the hospital, actually Ginger stayed with her mom a few days.
Good.
So Paige was released from the hospital. She called her dad, who put her up in a hotel. At this time, Ginger was fearful for her mother's safety.
Right.
Because at this point, Paige knew she wasn't welcome home.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know how she might react.
Well, she's clearly reactive.
Yes. Ginger actually stayed with her mom and brought a firearm with her.
Wow.
And she, I don't think she had any intention of using it, but she felt safer.
She was just that scared.
Yeah, she was that afraid of her sister and that afraid for her mother's safety, that out of anger because Paige wasn't allowed in, that she would break in.
Right.
And of course, she's very, very familiar with this home. Like, she's likely got a key. Like, she knows everything about the house. She lives there. That Ginger stayed there overnight just to like kind of protect her mom and to just not leave her elderly mother alone.
Yeah.
Who had, and I mean, she's in her 60s. So I think 60 is the new like 40.
Absolutely.
But I think that she had been just abused so much that like it aged her. They even said later they watched their mother age before their eyes, given what like the heartache and the grief and the shame and all of that, that I think that she was like, it seemed that she had been rapidly aging.
Yeah. Well, cortisol does that in really high amounts.
That it will. And she has very high amounts that I think that while she's in her 60s, she's like an old 60s. Like she's... Yeah. She has been battered and beaten, and there are so many emotions that she's feeling, and she's been through a lot. So Ginger's staying there, who, mind you, like, she's got at least two kids of her own.
Right.
So she's kind of putting her stuff on the line to be there, but she just felt safer having a firearm with her, that if Paige and maybe some of her friends or anyone else tried to break in and, like, finally take quote-unquote revenge on Carlene for not letting her back, that she felt like she might stand a chance to be able to protect her mom. And it's just awful that she had to feel like she needed to protect her mother from her sister.
Yeah.
So
the shitty situation.
Luckily she didn't come. Good. Paige again was probably enjoying a nice hotel,
right?
But she did just feel safer knowing that she had a way to protect her mom if Paige had tried anything. And then one of the last conversations Ginger ever had with her mother was odd.
Hmm.
This conversation was weird because it was about Carlene's vehicle.
Oh.
She had a lease, and that lease was up soon. And Ginger asked her what she planned to do next. Did she want to buy the car outright? Did she want to lease something else? Did she want to renew a lease? What did she want?
Right.
Her mother said that she didn't know what she wanted to do and that she wouldn't need that car long anyway.
Huh?
Ginger found this really odd because, of course, she needs a car.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she didn't question it much because it was just kind of like a in passing. It wasn't urgent, like, hey, the lease is up tomorrow.
Right.
What are we doing kind of thing. She just said, I don't think I'm going to need that. And it just kind of clocked Ginger and like this. That was a weird thing. And it really didn't make sense until later.
Oh, okay.
In hindsight, she felt that her mother just knew something bad was going to happen to her.
Okay.
And before she left that day, she gave hugs to everyone. Which I think this family is just very close.
Yeah.
So you kind of, the more familiar you are, like the less you hug maybe or something like that. Where like you're seeing someone you haven't seen in a long time, you come give a hug. But maybe if you see them weekly, yeah, it's just so casual that maybe you don't. I don't know that that's the case, but it was worth noting in their interviews that got she it. Hugged
specifically
everybody.
Specifically made an effort there, yeah.
Before she left, yeah.
Right.
And on March 14th, 2015, 69-year-old Carlene Conley was murdered.
Oh.
So this was the same day.
This was the same day?
Yeah.
Damn.
That night.
Okay.
Carlene was killed.
Holy shit.
So in hindsight, all of these things seem really interesting and kind of like alarm bells, but it's like, oh, I won't need that car. Why would you say that? But also, like, maybe you want to downsize. I don't
right.
know.
Right. Or like, I thought like maybe retirement is coming up and she's like, I might not need it. Like, I don't need to go to the same places every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Okay. Intuition.
Early on March 15th, so like early hours of March 15th,
mm-hmm,
Ginger was awoken by her daughter Taylor, who told her that police were at the door.
Oh, no.
Which is a horrible way to wake up. Taylor's like crying because she could see by the police officers' faces that this was not good news and that they really just kept reiterating, where is your mom? Could we need to speak with your mother? Could you
right.
could you grab her? And she's like, she's sleeping. So she goes and wakes her up. She gets to the door and she's just wondering, what did Paige do this time?
Right.
Because she's not, it's not unlikely to hear that Paige has done something.
Yes.
And for the police to be notifying her of something.
Right. And I think sometimes when you have to deal with something like this so frequently, just like the threshold goes down, mm-hmm, because that's not going to set the same amount of panic. I mean, it still will, like you're going to go do the thing, but
right,
you're like, okay, it's another this, it's another that, like it's another episode, instead of
like, can you stay with your mom tonight? But like normally would that be a phone call versus you're arriving in the dead of night,
right,
to come that you need to speak with me right now kind of thing.
Oh, that's terrifying.
The officer gently told Ginger that her mother had died and that her sister was in custody for her murder.
Oh my God.
And I believe those were really the only details they were able to give her at that time, because now it's an active investigation.
Right.
They let her know that her mother is deceased. They let her know that her sister is now arrested, but there's really not a whole lot of other information they can give her.
No.
It wasn't until the trial in 2017, so 2 years later, that the details of the events of March 14th, 2015 were revealed.
Okay.
As was tradition, like we said in the beginning, Carlene made a special dinner for the birthday boy or girl.
Okay.
Paige's birthday and Carlene's grandson's birthday were a day apart.
Okay.
I believe this is Ginger's son.
Got it.
So like Taylor's brother. They celebrated usually together.
Yeah.
But again, she liked to make that nice dinner for them.
Right.
Apparently, it's reported that Carlene asked Paige, what would you like for your birthday dinner? And Paige kind of blew her off, didn't answer. So Carlene made a lasagna because that's what her grandson loved.
Got it.
So she made what he liked because it's also his birthday. Paige was enraged by this and it turned into an argument.
Oh.
Which I have a lot of questions about all of this, but something else, just the Italian in me, mm-hmm. is really pissed that how the fuck are you mad about a lasagna? That is just, there are so many things, and yeah, there's a lot of problematic shit going on here, yeah. No doubt. But also,
a lasagna?
If somebody made me a lasagna for my birthday, like, I would kiss them on the nose. Are you kidding me?
Wait, do you want to hear the best news?
Yeah.
I forgot to tell you. It has never been aired before.
Oh. Oh, my. You're hearing it here, folks.
For Christmas, Santa, and by Santa, I mean our next door neighbor at home, gifted my parents an extra lasagna because they either made two or didn't need it, or they got two and didn't need it. They were like, okay, yeah, like, well, thank you so much, we'll take it or whatever, thinking it's like a 9x13, you know. It's a catering size lasagna. They have lasagna in the freezer for days. Like, we have lasagna, and that was a Christmas miracle. So I agree. I don't know how you can be upset about that.
First of all, I'm flying out to the Dabblesons' house.
I think they took like half of it to my brother and they were like, we still have more than we know what to do with.
I'm going to take your flight.
Yes.
And I'm going to go hang out with Mr. and Mrs. Abel Dabbleson.
And
we're
going to
feast on some lasagna.
Hell yeah.
In other words, I would be so thrilled.
Overjoyed.
I would be kicking my feet.
Yes.
I would be having a Baja blast.
Yeah.
My ass would be astonished.
Amazing.
To have a lasagna prepared for me. Absolutely. So instead of that, we already know Paige is problematic. This just adds to this,
mm-hmm.
that she's like, bullshit, that there's lasagna. I'm like, go fuck yourself. Now, in her rage, Paige got violent.
Okay.
Now, was it really about the lasagna? Probably not, but Paige has got significant mental health problems. She's got significant substance use issues. She's always competed with like the other grandchildren, so of course feeling slighted,
mm-hmm.
that her mother made what the grandson wanted and not what she wanted, even though she didn't share what she wanted.
Right.
Like, how dare you not read my mind?
Yeah.
This was like the she just lost it. It hit different this time for mm-hmm. some reason. Paige picked up her mother's knife block on the counter and hit her mother in the head with it.
Oh.
Meanwhile, her mother is 69 years old. And a head injury to anybody is dangerous and not something to joke about. But a head injury to a woman who's already been battered, who is that much more like delicate.
Yes.
Can be fatal. But that wasn't enough. Because then she took a knife from the knife block and stabbed her mother repeatedly with it.
Oh my God.
When the blades broke off of the knives, she just used another one. Carlene was stabbed a total of 79 times.
Holy shit.
70. Do you know how long it takes? Think of doing anything 79 times.
Anything. And then I was jaw on the floor. She broke a knife.
Like, and do you know how much one.
Effort that takes?
How much rage you must feel?
Yeah, the adrenaline or muscle or both.
All of it.
Going through your body with that much hatred for 79 times, enough to break steel, like mm-hmm. metal.
Even if I asked you to pick up your water bottle 79 times.
My arm's getting tired. I can't even braid my hair for 79 seconds.
And it takes time. Like, this isn't, yes, it's effort, but it's also like, that's a lot of time from start to finish that you right. had an opportunity to stop and you didn't.
Which says a lot. A lot.
And not only did she stab her mother nearly 80 times, but more weird than that, I guess, is that she bit her mother more than 24 times. So she's got 79 stab wounds and more than 20 bite marks.
Oh, she's in an episode. I don't know what. Okay. Wow. This is not funny. This is terrible. This is awful. In my head, it is a little bit comical to think of her sitting there biting multiple times.
Yeah, and it's like, did you do it after your mother was, or were you like biting her to like incapacitate like one of her arms maybe while she tried to fight you off because you are killing her? Like, there is so much. And Ginger said in her interview, she just said, my sister obliterated my mother. Which is just an awful sentence that nobody should ever have to say.
No.
To know that your mother didn't just die, that she died at the hands of her child.
And
the one that she apparently spent like 30 years protecting.
Mm-hmm.
And in fear. It wasn't accidental. This wasn't a slip and fall. This wasn't a freak thing. This was intentional homicide over attention diverted anywhere other than directly to Paige. And she just lost it.
Yeah.
Now, after her mother was dead, Paige called 911. Paige.
Okay.
Called 911. And she made a report.
Great.
She said, someone, not me. Somebody, I don't know who, could be anybody, just know it wasn't me, had broken in and killed Carlene.
She said, I was a good daughter and woman. Some things happened.
Some shit went down. It bears no repeating.
No longer a good daughter, but I am still a good one.
Yes. And if you haven't listened to her Chris Watts, please go do that.
Yeah. Holy shit.
So she does report that her mother is dead, but she is,
you know, she's like removing herself.
Someone did this. I don't know shit about shit, man. That's wild. I was just sleeping.
I was just here.
That's what she said.
I was sitting on the bench.
When police arrived, they found Paige covered in her mother's blood. And there are several photos of Paige. We will have some of them on our Instagram page. She is covered in blood, including blood in her hair, all over her face, in her clothing, down her neck. And there were like these thicker spots of blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were these like a spray, like a mist,
mm.
where, you know, this wasn't her going to her and finding her. This was that kind of blood spatter spray can only happen when you are present
in motion and the person is in the process of dying.
Yes. Yeah. Like, that is active.
You have a blood flow.
Correct.
At that time.
Yeah. This wasn't finding her and running over to her and like hugging her and trying to like bring her, doing anything. This wasn't from life-saving measures. Okay. This was from the commission of the murder.
Well, and also, I'm so sorry. You bit her over 24 times.
Yeah. Bite marks.
You stabbed her almost 80 and hit her in the head. And if this is not right. This is not good. I don't believe that. It makes me sick. It's so long. But this feels to me like it's adding to a case of like a literal psychotic episode.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong. There's been symptoms and signs. It's been growing for a long time. But like, in what right mind are you doing all of this, immediately calling the cops, not even changing, and then being like, I don't know, man, wasn't me?
Yeah, she's like, I was simply sleeping. That's what she said. She was sleeping in the basement, which is where her bedroom was, that she came up the stairs after a nap and found her mother in the kitchen in the state and called. This is what she claimed. She was, of course, brought in for questioning.
As she should be.
And again, she gives this initial statement and they were like, that doesn't check out, Paige, and you know that. And she was like, yeah. Then she changed her story and she said, you know, actually, now that you mention it, it must have been drug dealers who were looking for me but killed her instead.
Yeah, that's usually what they do.
Yeah. Then she changed it again
Yeah.
To say that it was 4 or 5 girls between the age... Now, I don't put it past them. Between the ages of 10 and 12. Vicious ages.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. You would have gotten me better with 12 to 14, but it is a tough time.
I mean, 10 to 12 year olds can be fucking brutal too. Yeah. But she claims that it was, I don't mean, I'm laughing at
the insanity,
the like idiocy of the statement that she thought of it. She said it out loud and she was like, that's it. That's the one. She said that 4 or 5, she didn't know, 4 or 5. Okay.
Well, it's hard to see all the hair pulling and
yeah,
biting.
Between 10 and 12 years old, knocked on the front door and she of course answered it.
Oh, she let them in.
Well, and she, no. They said trick or treat. And then
they
entered the home. And they were like, it's March. This isn't Halloween. And she's like, what? I know, that's what I said. She was like, I'm thinking to myself, but it's March. Why are they trick or treating?
What are they dressed up as? These murderous 10 to 12 year olds.
Now that's a storyline.
And didn't, you know what, honestly, the most realistic part of that is she didn't know which age.
Because
mm-hmm. at that point in time, there's like a few years where you're like, you could be 9 or you could be 12.
Uh-huh.
And I have no idea.
But she was like, there were 4 or 5 from 10 to 12 and they said trick or treat.
And I'm like, it's March, bro. What?
And I'm like, what? I don't have anything for you. And wow. What? At like 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
Okay. So all of this to say, she was full of shit and she just, every time she got caught in something, she would change it and change it again and right. change it again. And then ultimately she changed it to what I believe is her last version of the story to say that, yes, she killed her mother, but it was in self-defense.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, Jan.
Needless to say, based on the history, the blood spatter evidence, the DNA, it was clear that the killer was none of the above and only Paige herself. We right. knew this. And that this attack was not in self-defense.
The DNA test determined you are the killer.
You are. And also the lie detector test determined that was a lie. So,
yeah.
They got her. And in June of 2017, Paige was sentenced to 27 years in prison, which to me is not enough.
Oh, okay. Is there any other updates after that?
There are some statements. Now, Paige, of course, is appealing, but that's what everyone appeals.
Yeah.
She's claiming mental health, which I understand, but the evidence of the effort it took and the wherewithal she had to then lie and try to like cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
Did she regret it? Maybe, but she didn't do it because she was like clinically insane.
Yeah.
She made the choice to murder her mother, and that evidence of every attack leading up to it only escalated. It started with just yelling.
Well, and that's why.
And banging on doors.
My whole thought of this is like, I have a lot of thoughts on the 24-hour hold, and I'll talk about those after. But specifically in terms of sentencing, I wish there was a medium between not guilty by reason of insanity and prison. And that's not to say that I think people who commit heinous acts knowingly and try to cover it up should not be held accountable. But there's clearly something happening, and I think she needs a high level of care. And if maybe when she's done with that care, she gets released to the prison.
Mm.
Fine, but like, we need like stabilizing meds.
What we need are mental health hospitals again, frankly. Yeah. When they all,
yes,
when we came up with yes. These incredible mental health meds that everyone sings the praises of, which I mean, maybe some are good, others I think just pacify the problem. And we say, well, we have medications, we don't need hospitals. And it's like, no, we actually need the treatment too. Some of those mental health medications are incredible, but they need stabilizing first. And there are some people that just need to be in a facility.
And we need treatment.
Like legit, legitimate
like
treatment.
If you want to know how I got all of the gray hairs on my head, and there's plenty, I need you to know that all of it is because there are preventable issues that are happening that we have the ability, we have the resources, we have the capacity to do that we choose not to do for a variety of reasons. And the amount of people that I have worked with in the criminal justice field, in the mental health field, that have issues like this
mm-hmm.
are people who are struggling. Nobody wants to live like that, but also are really dangerous to themselves and others. And it is not fair to anybody else in that prison or Paige, I think, if, and this is, okay, this is an ethical, like a theory one for me, but I think if prisons have the burden of providing healthcare and services, this is a disservice to someone like Paige who needs this intense treatment. But I don't think that should mean an alleviation of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that aren't like Paige, who are just in the world, like if you go to one of the hospitals around you, and I'll rant more about laws later again, but like they will stabilize you. They will put you on meds until you can leave. They are not treating you. Mm-hmm. They are just getting you safe to leave. And because we don't have state run or country run and, you know, whatever, run in a uniform way with ethics and quality assurance, no one is getting help unless they have a lot of money and a lot of support and a lot of time, because there are beds you can buy.
Mm-hmm.
There are beds you can buy for sure. Or if you are waiting for one of the 20 beds in your region to become available, you're waiting for years.
You're waiting for years, and a lot of the people that need that do not have the funds because of how bad their mental health is.
Right. It costs to be able a to lot.
Afford that out of pocket, and unless they have very wealthy family members who are willing to fork that over, it often doesn't happen.
Right.
I would like to see us actually have mental health facilities again. I think Paige could have benefited from that. I also think that she would need to be sober to do that.
Well, and that's what I mean. An intensive level of treatment. Like, get her detoxed. Get her, I mean, with medical attention. Like, mm-hmm. you need that. But, like, detox off of it and keep her there until she does the work. Her family should have had, I don't know if they did and didn't know or did and chose not to, but if they didn't have this ability, they absolutely deserved the ability to check her in. She is a danger to herself. She's a danger to others. And they have a whole history proving that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not to say I think people should be automatically forced if they're not doing well. But those are the two things that are requirements for that. And she has both.
Mm-hmm. Well,
anyway. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so pissed. Okay.
A part of, so now that she's in prison.
Yes.
They're trying to file motions to get other things reconsidered, have a different expert come and evaluate her. But they did talk about some of the circumstances of the evening that everything happened.
Mm-hmm.
According to Paige, she was severely intoxicated. Okay. Like, she was drinking vodka daily, I believe it was.
Ooh, she really needs a medical detox. Okay.
Yes, she was extremely, extremely intoxicated, and that was kind of her thing. She was struggling with like significant vodka
alcohol
daily. She also hadn't slept in 3 or 4 days, which to me is likely the use of either another drug or some other mental health condition where she couldn't, and that she had ingested a very large quantity of Dramamine.
Good, we're mixing.
So we're mixing a bunch of other things, and then she gets mad about lasagna. And then that's what...
And that's the last straw.
Yeah. And I that's probably still ongoing because those things rarely end. Defense attorneys love making money off of trying to help with the appeal, and a defendant has nothing but time to focus on an appeal. So we'll see where that ends up going. Anne Gorman, who is Ginger and Paige's sister, she did not sit for The Evil Lives Here, but she did give statements to other reporters, which is why I have a statement from her, said that she wants her mom to be remembered as the great, loving woman that she was.
Yeah.
Because Paige did claim that this was self-defense, and that's kind of what they ran with. So they were accusing and throwing shit at a wall to see what would stick.
Yeah.
To claim that Carlene, in whatever way, could be deserving of what happened to her, or at least somehow mitigate the responsibility of Paige for what she did. And that was infuriating for
yes.
Carlene's children to say she was... She was an incredible woman who would have never made anybody feel unsafe. How dare you say that? So they want her to be remembered for the woman that she really was and not how she was painted in a trial.
Well, and I think that all of her actions show that. She is a loving caregiver. I mean, she did her best during a really difficult time in a marriage, which is hard for anybody. That's like life-changing and trauma, even in the best cases. But it doesn't sound like she did anything bad then. She took care of the kids. She continued to. And then she cared for her daughter so much, who was struggling, that even though it hurt her, literally, mm-hmm. and I'm sure emotionally as well, that she said, I'd rather keep her safe here. And then mm-hmm. she goes out of her way to do cute things like make your favorite meal on your birthday. And I think it is obvious that Paige is struggling with something. I also think it's obvious that self-defense is whatever a good plan B for a lot of people to try to throw.
But a complete and total slap in the face to everything that her mother did do for her.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, is it not enough that you murdered her? Is it not enough that you took her life? But then you have to try to sully her reputation. And that, like...
And I think the hard part for me, too, is... You know, I don't want to say I get it, like, I condone it. I don't condone it, but I'd understand it better if it was, like, right after this. Like, you're still in the heat of the moment. You're still like, well, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever.
No, she spun four stories before she got to that one.
But, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, you have this, like, oh, shit, adrenaline. Like, I got to get out of this backed corner. And then you're doing whatever you can, as shitty as it is. She just murdered her mom. So, like, I'm not expecting her to have the same ethics bar I would.
Mm-hmm.
But what's difficult for me...
That's good of you, yeah.
Yeah. What's difficult for me is that you get to trials, and trials are years later sometimes. And mm-hmm. this one was. This was 2017, mm-hmm. is that what you said?
Yeah.
So you've had 2 years to think on this, and this is still your plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is what's challenging to me, is like, you have that option.
Yeah, when she found out, though, that every other piece of evidence led back to her, when the spatter, the DNA, also, every other piece, like, she could not blame it on adolescent children. She couldn't yeah. blame it on a drug deal gone wrong. She couldn't blame it on a mysterious intruder, when she had to actually come forward with the fact that she inflicted this.
What else can I do to make it better?
Only then was it, well, I did, but it wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
And then to then further sully her name and her reputation is just, it's just another cut. Like, it really is. And yeah. Their family was very frustrated by this, obviously.
Yeah.
Anne said of Paige, again, Anne's her, one of the other daughters, she said, quote, she's an animal. Who kills their mother? What kind of person kills their mother? Like, just very upset. Yeah. Just how does one even do that? And she said that she felt relief when the verdict was read.
I can understand that.
Anne and Ginger, they do not believe that she felt any remorse.
Yeah.
They said that she didn't look to them. In fact, Ginger said, she's quoted in an article saying, there certainly wasn't ever any apologetic looks in any direction. She avoided looking at us at all costs. This is the trial.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is guilt or if it's just self-preservation. Ginger also said that she was frustrated with the years of abuse that her mom endured. Of course. I mean, yeah. frustrated is probably the least of it.
Understatement. Yeah.
But that she felt like she was being terrorized in her own home. Like, she yeah. felt like her mother could not feel safe in her home that she allowed Paige into.
Right.
And that her sister was troubled and needy, and it was a very dangerous problem that seemingly nobody took as seriously as they should have. Her mother wouldn't let her call the police most of the time. So Carlene would call Ginger to come.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, police were never notified. And when she did allow her to call the police after Ginger's prompting, or mm-hmm. Paige, excuse me, Carlene was really that scared that police really needed to be called, she refused to press any charges.
Yeah.
She felt like her hands were tied every time she tried to help her mom, and it made her feel sick because Paige was never held accountable and she took advantage of her mom's caring nature, and it got her killed.
Yeah.
And she said, quote, we had the same parents. We had the same upbringing. But something within Paige was just not right from the get-go. I mean, something was just rotten inside.
Oh.
Ginger also said, quote, my mother didn't want to feel like she was abandoning her child, and in the end, that's what killed her.
Yeah.
Ginger's daughter, Taylor, said that she felt robbed of her time with her gran.
Oh.
She's upset that her gran never saw her graduate high school or college or see her get married or start her own family.
That's so traumatic for that poor girl.
She's devastated at not only what would have been, but what should have been.
Right.
She should have had opportunities for that. Anne said, quote, You don't realize how much your mother means to you until she's gone. She was always there. She taught me how to be a woman. And through all of this, I've become a stronger woman thanks to her. Ugh. At the end of the Evil Lives Here episode, Ginger said that in situations like these, you either let it destroy you or you let it make you stronger.
She's right.
These cases are heavy and, yes, frustrating for a multitude of reasons. We love to think that when it comes to crime, if anyone is to cause us harm, it will be a stranger. Mm. Some ghoul slinking in the night, jumping from an alleyway, dressed in black, and that we'll just know. We'll know that they're dangerous. We'll know to stay away. And while all of those things can happen, and they do sometimes, we are far more likely to be a victim of violence inflicted by someone that we know,
yep,
even someone we love. Domestic violence doesn't discriminate, and just because this was a seemingly normal family from the outside looking in does not mean violence can't permeate that.
Right.
While some states don't operate this way, I know some of you will be frustrated with the seemingly lack of effort on law enforcement parts, and I'm not familiar with their exact state's laws, and I won't pretend to be, but I will say that some states do still operate in this way in terms of if the victim doesn't want charges to be pressed, mm-hmm, they won't. Like, they will really only do it with victim's permission,
yes,
which sounds very well intended, but too many times law enforcement would be forced to take the word of a victim that, mm-hmm, they don't want to move forward with charges, they don't want anything else to come of it, that everything is fine, and then the next time that those same officers are called, it's to the scene of a homicide.
Yes.
It's rare now that people are not incarcerated for this, or excuse me, arrested for this. So if there's any belief that there's any kind of crime being committed, somebody's leaving in handcuffs.
Right.
Some jurisdictions no longer rely on that piece from the victims. They're just going to take them. Even if it's seemingly inconsequential, you'll see cases where like somebody flicks somebody or like pushes, yes, like, and it almost seems like extreme of like, wow, that's considered an assault. And so is like beating somebody.
Yeah.
And while there's different classifications of those things, I think a lot of times it's cases similar to these, mm-hmm, where it wasn't taken seriously when it should have been by, not to blame the victim, but when action could have been taken that would have made a difference later.
Yeah.
Either by the victim, by law enforcement, by other family, by something that it could have made a difference, that now it is, the laws are written such that law enforcement shall, yes, arrest rather than law enforcement can. May.
Yeah.
So there's that change in language.
Well, and I think too, like, Allie doesn't know this. I love you so much. Mm-hmm. You've stepped on a landmine of my ranting.
Oh.
Which I'm trying to keep at a minimum, and I think I'm doing okay. But domestic violence laws are so fascinating to me because it's a messy, complicated thing. And mm-hmm, I think a lot of crimes are, right? Especially knowing that most of them are not a stranger. Like, mm-hmm, there's going to be complicated feelings. They're going to want the best for the other person, even if you're so pissed. Or like, mm-hmm, you might not want the consequences. Maybe you know it's going to be worse when they get out. You don't know. Mm-hmm. I think there are times that there are a lot of the laws that have been replacing the may and have become the shall are like initial aggressor laws, mm-hmm, which include arresting or at least separating whoever caused the most damage or was like clearly the main aggressor, mm-hmm, into this. And I think there's good and bad on that. I think they should be separated. We definitely need a report and who they think. I do kind of wish there was like a week before an arrest, like a forced separation, but return, because sometimes those get it really right and those are amazing times, and sometimes it's like the victim gets arrested because they have deep bruises that haven't shown up on the skin yet, but the other person has scratch marks, mm-hmm, and it's hard in those scenarios. It's, I think, more so with intimate partner violence than just domestic violence on the whole, mm-hmm, to really see that. But domestic violence like this, it's so much more common than you'd expect it to be. Mm-hmm. And that is so not okay. And especially when it's a family, like someone you're not romantically partnered with or like intertwined with. it adds a lot to it because now you have your whole life of trauma. You have all of these past things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a choice to break up and leave.
Well, right. And there's also a difference where, you know, it, take this situation. If Paige were literally beating Carlene, which she was.
Yes.
And law enforcement isn't called. And then Carlene builds up the strength or just has had enough and snaps and pushes Paige and say she falls down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Paige could then go call 911. Paige will press charges and yes, now Carlene will. Is arrested. And so it's not considering now in that moment, you know, you have to look at intent. You have to look at right. force. You have to look at
each incident,
what might be justifiable, what's self-defense versus what isn't. But in all likelihood, Carlene would be arrested in that yes. situation. And you have to consider all those things. And that's why now a lot of the laws are written that somebody shall be arrested. Now, right. that doesn't mean that charges will be like formally like they'll sent. That they won't drop them later.
Right.
That it could be like you guys need a mandatory
break
timeout.
Literally.
Where now there's a no contact in place. So now you can't speak. This now needs to go before a judge and you guys can talk about it there.
Yeah.
You, and attorneys can get involved. And so the it's written now so that the police will, they have to arrest, but that doesn't yes. mean that it will go further than that. But somebody is leaving. There needs to be an immediate separation for everybody's safety.
Yep.
And that it can now be handled in a courtroom.
Which I also think is so important because in a
everyone needs to cool off.
Everyone needs a minute to cool off. It's always going to be safest to separate until you have that cool down. You cannot heal. You cannot move forward. You cannot work on anything. You can't even be logicked down to earth until mm-hmm. you're de-escalated.
Yep.
So that's good. But also, and you're hearing this from me, I know, but you should sit down maybe, but law enforcement is not mental health. They are not social workers. They can be trained. They should be trained to be the most knowledgeable they can walking into a scenario.
But now it but seems
that's
like
not
they're
their job.
But they're expected to now.
Right. And I think there is always a benefit in furthering that, in knowing the most you can, in trying to have that as a forefront in your mind when you walk into situations like this.
It can only be a tool and a benefit, like something else on your tool belt, so to speak. However,
it is truly not what they're trained in.
It's not what your job is. You're not licensed. You don't have that, that further training that is needed to do that. Like
right. They have specialty on different knowledge and your brain only has so much room for so long with the time that you have after your initial passion and career and life after that. So like, mm-hmm. I don't think they should be walking in there with an MSW. Like, that's not what I'm asking for.
Right.
I love there have been some places that have troubleshooted bringing a social worker with mm-hmm. for calls like this. I think that's worked. I love if we can find a way to do it consistently, very, I don't want to say minorly, but like without a huge interruption to their life. I love the idea of bringing it to a court. Let someone bring in a professional for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even complaining about these laws. I think they're great. It shows progress. It shows we're moving forward. There is still some work to do, but it is important. And my God, look at your community resources, please, in your local laws. My last part of my rant, and I think no, there's two more parts. I'll keep it quick. The one thing I wanted to say is in terms of the hospitals, please, 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 pretty, pretty please with the cherry on top. I'm begging you, look up your state and local legislation about inpatient and IEAs. IEAs is an involuntary emergency admission. This is what happens when someone is taken in for that supervision. Now, I know around here, like in multiple states in the Northeast region, it's a mandatory 72-hour hold.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're fine, it wasn't like, I don't know, maybe you're walking by an insane thing and you get mistaken for someone who's bad. You could be in there totally fine. You're there for 72 hours.
I think a lot of states have moved away from the 24 hours because right. it truthfully is not long enough.
It's not long enough.
But it rarely goes longer than the 72. It is they're trying to stabilize you. If they can't, they'll look for somewhere else. Otherwise, they're giving you outpatient resources that,
once again,
probably not the level of care you need. And also, somebody who's struggling is not likely going to continue like seeking that out. It needs to be, usually residential is best.
Yes, residential, it's expensive, it's wait listy. You should, oh guys, I don't know where to find it. I'll figure this out. There's a documentary called The Lost Boys. It is phenomenal, mm-hmm. but it is a lot about this concept of kids that are, their brains are just not working. There's something going wrong. They're losing their shit over different things in different ways. Like, they're just very mentally unwell. And the parent is not equipped for that, because I don't know anybody who like gives birth and is like having a great time 6 months in, and then they're like, oh yeah, I guess I didn't prep for what happens if there's a major chemical imbalance, or if there's mm-hmm. head trauma, or if something else happens, and now I am just a lay person doing my job mm-hmm. and being a mom, and my kid has these needs that are so far beyond what I can prep for and train for and handle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very valid. But like, it really showed a lot of the issues with getting treatment for these kids, even as the parents are saying, like, we need help.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as we see in this case, is not always the case, because a lot of parents feel bad saying that. There's like kind of a stigma of shame of like, you can't do it. But the best way to love someone you love is to get them the care they need.
And if you're not equipped to do it,
it's more loving to find someone who
can
help.
It's doing a disservice.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean, you know, drop them off, throw away the key. No. And but that's not the case. But it can be a village effort.
Yeah.
And maybe if Paige got early intervention, maybe it would have made a difference. Maybe it wouldn't have. I don't know. But at least with some of the laws now that force
yes.
time apart, you have to go before a judge. Maybe that person doesn't get bail. Maybe that person does, but they can't return to a shared residence yet.
Right.
Maybe there's some other kind of mediation that needs to happen. There's a whole web of things that could happen. Be aware of your laws, obviously, and also just consider how you're being treated and consider how you would allow a loved one to be treated. And if that is not, you know, if someone were mean to Abby,
mm-hmm.
I'd have no problem like
walking up one side of them and down the other.
Right. Whereas if I might be less inclined to do that for myself, you have to also consider, well, would you let someone do that to your best friend?
Right.
Would you let someone do that? I guess your mom is not a good example in this case, but like, would you let someone do that to like your grandmother? Would you let right. somebody do that to somebody that you care about? And if the answer is no, why are you letting it happen to yourself? So that kind of thing. But I do just want to say that if you or somebody you know are experiencing domestic violence, help is available.
Yes.
You can visit the national resource for the U.S., which is thehotline.org.
Mm-hmm.
Call 1-800-799-7233 or text START to 88788. This is a great starting place. This is not a great ending place. Local is always better. For more information about what is available locally, please do your own research. But as always, exercise caution in deleting your search history using a protected browser and logging out of any Gmail or other kind of accounts that will log sites that you've been to that someone else could maybe automatically log into.
Right.
Your state's Department of Health and Human Services should offer resources on this, as well as your local hospitals and urgent cares and your local police and sheriff departments. As always, we encourage you to be safe, ask professionals for help when you need it, and take care of yourself.
Yeah.
The ATFTC family would not be the same without you.
No. And the very last thing in tandem with this is, it may feel counterintuitive, but call DCYF if you need to. A lot of people have this sense, and don't get me wrong, I'm all about protecting yourself where possible. But oftentimes in cases like this, in domestic violence that is familial or within the home, that is not intimate partner violence, there is a fear of showing the state, specifically because of the power that they have, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And while I understand that fear, I can assure you, as someone who has worked very closely with this population professionally, they almost always get called anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that you deserve it, or that, you know, something huge should happen, but it is A, always better to go first and say, I need the help, I need the resources.
Well, sometimes all they do is come in and give resources, and if you just ask for them, it'll be more streamlined.
And if you can call and say, like, hey, what can you refer me to? They have money, they have funds, and granted, I'm sure it's changing all the time, but states have funds to get you those resources that sometimes only they can refer you to.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need an in-home service. Sometimes you need a community-based service, or because they are government, they might have pull at your local hospital or a residential nearby.
You up on a waiting list.
Right, or a specific treatment school that kids need. There are things out there, and it is scary, but I just always encourage, ask for the resources. And even if that means you have to open a voluntary case... A voluntary case is by definition voluntary. You can end it whenever you want. Usually they do have that, at least in this region, for if they're paying for services because they want to follow up and see if it's helping. But that does not mean you're stuck with them forever if you don't want to be. And it's always worth looking into. But take the help you can get. Like, we need our communities more than ever. And if we're not going to have... funded hospitals, which we should really have, and I'm going to try really hard to not say more than that. we need to have each other, and we need to have each other's back. And if there's something someone can do for you because you're brave enough to open up that door or call a line, it's going to help everybody. And maybe you might find the thing that you needed or they needed to really fix it and make things better. Because, you know, the ATFDC fam wouldn't be the same without you. And we know your family wouldn't be the same without all of their people, too. And when you love your people, you just want them as happy and healthy as they can be. So
work on that.
Yeah.
Jot that down.
Jot it down. Know you're loved and cherished.
Bitch.
Get absolutely treasured, idiot. Yeah. And we know you do the same for all of your people. So we love you. We just want to... help, encourage, educate, however we can. This is a wild case.
I know.
I'm fascinated to see where the appeal goes. I don't think it'll go anywhere. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of legal grounds for an appeal.
Yeah, I mean, there's always grounds for an appeal in terms of can you make an appeal? Sure.
Yes, you're right. But
should it go anywhere? Will it go anywhere? Now that is the $1 million question.
Yes. But are they going to hear it?
I don't think that she's got much. I think that... she made very poor decisions, and she was making very poor decisions for years, and that is what it is, and I think that she's where she needs to be. Sorry. But that being said, she'll be in her 50s, like, she'll be younger than her mother was when she died, when she's released.
Oh my gosh. I also just, personal take, 80 stab wounds to me is worth more than 27 years.
Yeah, don't know where they got that number.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. That's crazy. I'm glad we have a constitutional right to appeal. I don't know that there was anything unconstitutional about this being handled. Doesn't sound like it from our end. Sounds like there's a good solution, if at least the best we can do right now, probably. And hey, just friendly PSA, local armchair psychologist and... you know, two girls who work in the field, don't do drugs.
We love you, and we want your body and mental health to be the best that it can be. And we would highly discourage you. Like, you know, if there's any time, anything that you can't go a day without using or touching, or a week or a month, or if someone said, hey, you need 30 days without this, if you can't do that, maybe that's a hint that we need to reevaluate our relationship with it.
Also,
and that can look a bunch of different ways, but there's just, you know, take care of yourself. There's a lot of poison in this world.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere. And it's, you know, I don't want to be like a Nancy Reagan, just say no. It's not that. It's you need to be smart. You need to take care of your body. Dependence is making you dependent on anything, whether that is legal, illegal, whatever. But also,
just because it's legal doesn't mean it's good. I'm sure everyone is, you know, somebody who has struggled with alcohol, and alcohol can be bought literally anywhere.
Yeah, and it's literally legal. And I say this historically because we needed money after the prohibition. So don't get me wrong. We love it. We enjoy it responsibly. Do that with anything. But if this case is not evidence enough, I'm sorry, this is the only dig I have to take. Sustained drug use kills your brain cells and they don't come back.
Nope, we don't get to make more of those ones.
No, and if you don't want to be caught as the person trying to rub together the ones that you have and coming up with 5, 10 to 12 year olds came in to trick or treat in March and then stabbed my mother 80 times.
Mm-hmm.
It's just best not to take that chance. Those aren't coming back. They're not growing back.
And bit her with my dental records.
Yeah, with my face. They took my face and bit her.
I know it's wild.
I know.
Imagine what I thought.
I know. They're 10-year-olds with a full set of grown adult teeth that look just like mine. All of them. They're identical.
Crazy. It's wildness. Well, on that note.
Yeah.
We love you guys. We hope you enjoyed this case. Let us know what you thought.
Yeah, this is a good one.
And we will see you next week.
And if I check my watch, that was about time for true crime. Bye.
Hey.
Bye. You.
Oh.
Yoo-hoo. Pod's on. That was the wrong tone.
That was, it's yoo-hoo.
Yoo-hoo. The pod's on. Yoo-hoo.
Yoo-hoo.
Yoo-hoo. What the hell? Am I losing my yoo-hoo?
You better not.
Yoo-hoo. What do I sound like?